Hello, everybody. This is Alan Fine, and I'm here with Eric Odone, who is the Senior Vice President of the Western Region for Qatar Airways. And we're going to talk about how Qatar never stopped flying, how it's got new routes and destinations. We'll talk about all that and more on Insider Travel Report. So, Eric, we spoke back in July, and at that time, you said that prior to the pandemic, you were flying to roughly 160 destinations. And then at the worst point, when nobody was flying, you were flying to 30, which is very impressive. And then it's now, where are you at now?
So we're now 108 destination, and the plan is to be by, to 124 by the end of December.
And so of those 108, eight of them our American destinations, which according to my notes are Boston, Chicago, Dallas-Fort Worth, Houston, Los Angeles, New York, Philadelphia, and Washington, D.C.
That's a U.S. one. That's a U.S. one.
Right. But there's one more coming up in December. Tell us about it.
That's correct, yes. We've recently started service again from Philadelphia and Houston, but we are basically starting San Francisco. Direct flight to Doha, four frequency per week from the 15th of December.
And the significance of San Francisco strategically, why that particular destination?
Well, our network is naturally is quite East Coast focused. So San Francisco was always a gateway missing in our network. I mean, it's a wonderful place. I lived there myself for 8 years. On top of everything one can think of San Francisco, it's also the center of innovation and creativity for the entire world. So very important to link San Francisco to our network. And the beauty of San Francisco also is that it has a great leisure component, inbound travel. Everybody wants to come to San Francisco at least once in their lives. So that would be a very interesting proposition for our
In fact, I think each of the destinations you go to are both business and leisure. They're all very significant for those reasons.
Yes, to a certain extent. I mean, most of them are really strategic locations. If they have the leisure component, it's a bonus. But for us, really what matters is routes that can actually feed to a broader range of destinations. So a lot of our destinations feed into American airline hub, places like obviously JFK, Chicago, Dallas, Los Angeles. Some like JFK and Boston are great JetBlue hub. And actually San Francisco is going to be a great hub for Alaska Airlines, which is going to be joining Oneworld by the end of March.
But it was interesting, you said that it's a bonus if there's the leisure side at any of these destinations. So it begs the question of what are you seeing now? We were anticipating leisure leading business, but are you seeing the opposite?
We see a bit of both. I mean, it sort of depends on the on some of the routes. The business travel really hasn't started much. There's some. What has been quite spectacular has been the travel to what we call visit your friend and relative. So people going back basically to their sort of home country or second generation home country. And that has been incredibly successful and with a lot of traffic. But we've also seen a lot of traffic to real leisure destination, for example. I mean, we are the biggest carrier between the US and the Maldives, for example, at the moment, which shows that for the right destination, people actually prepare to travel on the right airline as well.
That's right. Let's talk about, at this time, everyone's tightened the belt, trying to conserve cash. One of the cost-saving strategies that you guys had was a shift in planes. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, our range of aircraft is actually very, very varied. We've got some narrow body aircraft, got some wide body aircraft. We had 10 F380s, and it was decided that it wouldn't be economically viable and sustainable to actually continue to operate them in the current climate. So we parked those 10 F380s, especially when we found out that the A380 emitted 80% more CO2 carbon dioxide per block hour. than the A350. So suddenly there was a big difference in the sustainability of each aircraft. And in fact, what is on a, if you look at New York to Doha, for example, the A380 emitted 95% more CO2 per block hour, while the A380 saves around 20 tons of CO2 per block hour. So it's a massive, massive difference.
And the Boeing 787, same kind of analysis? Yes.
But we don't operate the 787 from the USA. It's only a 100% Airbus 350 fleet.
So there's a carbon difference. There's a fuel saving difference. What about the interior of the plane and the number of seats?
Well, they vary slightly depending on the aircraft. I mean, an A350-900 is smaller than an A350-1000. But ultimately, the sustainability of the aircraft and the green credential remain the same across both flights. They're also good aircraft for cargo, and we are the biggest cargo airline in the world at the moment. So it's important in our balance sheet to have good cargo business and good passenger business, especially when you link hubs like that. It could give a sort of through connectivity of both passenger and cargo.
Absolutely. So another cost-saving strategy, everybody has had to do furloughs and layoffs. So we're just checking on you guys. Were you able to bring some people back?
Well, certainly from an America's perspective, we've never had a furlough policy at all. Generally, what we've tried has been to find support wherever the activity required it. So whenever we have an airport which is closed, for example, we use the teams to support the refunds, for example, travel agency queries, passenger queries. We've done that also at head office. We've got a lot of cabin crew working in social media, in call center. So just trying to find a balance in order to...
You've been able to shift people around to where they're needed, which is great for them. Not only are they still employed, but they get to see something from another perspective. They get to learn other parts of the business. That's great.
Absolutely. And also, I mean, if you think about it, the cabin crew have, you know, that wonderful warmth, that genuine quality that actually is these are skills that can be transferred to other activities and actually be a bonus.
I can see that. So the other thing that we talked about back in July was the safety protocols that you guys put in place before almost anyone, and how impressed we all were with your videos and your transparency immediately. And so now the question is, how have those protocols changed as you've evolved and learned?
I mean, we within a week of the pandemic, we were the first airline to be so transparent about all our hygiene protocol. And of course, we adapted that throughout the pandemic in response to what the passenger expected. So, you know, at first you give some antiseptic gel, for example. Eventually, we made the masks compulsory. Then we started giving people the face shields as well. I mean, originally, we had like the full PPE equipment for the cabin crew. Now we've made it a little bit less lab-like, you know. But since we talked, I think the biggest element is we now use those wonderful Honeywell ultraviolet robots to actually...
Those are great.
They're really, really impressive. And we are the only airline doing that. And I think it's actually wonderful when technology like that becomes such a customer benefit.
Have you found that the flights are fuller? I mean, I know that you did some charters where you had full flights. We discussed the fact that your protocols were working because with contact tracing, there were no difficulties. Are the flights fuller now?
What's interesting is we keep adding capacity and the load factor remains constant, which is great. I mean, it's also to do with where no times are lifted and people are able to fly. So, for example, South Africa lifted its no time, so now we've been able to reintroduce flight to South Africa. So immediately you get this new source of traffic. So that's what has been quite impressive.
You sell the middle seat. The middle seat is not an issue when your protocols are in place and everyone's healthy, correct?
That's correct. I mean, ultimately, the flights are not full enough to worry that much about the middle seat at that stage. I think what's the most important is to have the air filtration in the aircraft. You know, we've got very young fleets, 5 years average. So we've got the top-notch technologies there. The masks are mandatory. The face shields are distributed. We have everything is sterile, and we've got the robots both on the ground, actually on board the airplane when we do the cleaning. So I think there's a range of measures that have been taken, which ultimately make people feel quite safe.
Let's talk about at the time we spoke in July, your booking flexibility policies were unbelievable, very broad. Now, over time, I'm sure they've gotten more restricted. Let's talk about the difference now and what exactly someone booking can expect.
They haven't really. I mean, you know, if you just need to change your travel plan without any specific reason, you basically you can hold on the tickets for 2 years, you can have unlimited day change, and you can exchange the value of the ticket for further travel with an extra 10% value. So that's still, you know, quite amazing. And of course, if your plane is actually canceled, then you can, you know, refund your ticket, which we've done a lot of that. You can change the destination and you can swap for miles if you prefer. So there's still a lot of options.
Oh, absolutely. But I remember in the very beginning, you could change to a destination 5,000 miles away from your original destination. And now I think that's narrowed to 500.
Yes, yes. It was.
It's still pretty generous.
Still pretty, yes. Absolutely.
All right. So, Eric, is there anything that you want? You know, we go out to almost 100,000 travel advisors. Is there anything you want them to know at this time?
Oh, okay. Well, you know, obviously, I'm a big fan of the airline, so I would want to say that, you know, the first thing which is important with us is that we try to file honest schedules with the intention of flying them. We don't want to have sort of, you know, bogus schedules in the GDSs and cancel the last minute and creating a lot of servicing issues for our travel partners. So it can happen, but we do everything we can not to do that. I think the second thing is we offer greater connectivity than any other airline in the world. And we do that through, you know, the third best airport in the world, in Doha, which is actually the only airport in the top 10, airport in the Middle East in the top 10. I think we've tried very, very hard to be fair and reliable to both the customer and to our trade partner. I mean, we've supported passenger with refund, we've supported our trade partners. It's a two-way relationship that works collectively. I think what has been fascinating for me as someone who's been in the industry for over 30 years is how agile Qatar Airways has been. I mean, we've, you know, no time closes down, and immediately we're able to actually put flights to those destinations because we never stop flying and because we have ultimately the most experience in terms of our safety amongst all the airline. So we continue to try to adapt to the customer needs and be fast. And I think the last thing is, I think we are really an airline that people can rely upon. We've been operating throughout the pandemic. We've never abandoned our passengers in terms of service, of network, of sustainability, of hygiene. You know, everything, all that has been at the core of everything we've done. So I hope the passenger will be impressed, and our trade partners will appreciate that.
I think the travel advisors will definitely appreciate when a trip is set and it actually goes as scheduled. I think that's from the get-go, that's already a good start.
The old-fashioned way, the way it used to happen.
Yeah. All right, well, Eric, thank you for talking to us.
Thank you very much, Alan. Always nice talking to you.
And this is Alan Fine for Insider Travel Report.